A lot of anger over Indiana's law that many say discriminates against gay people. Well, earlier today, this is the latest, NASCAR's chief communications officer said that NASCAR is disappointed in Indiana's religious freedom law. So do you hear that, Indiana? You're not progressive enough for NASCAR. Indiana's governor, Mike Pence, said the new law is not a license to discriminate against gays. Yeah, he said, think of it as more of a learner's permit. But you have to have an adult present when you discriminate.
Right, you gotta start.
And then you move forward.
Sure.
Yeah.
A lot of people think the law is anti-gay. Well, presidential hopefuls, Jeb Bush, Ted Cruz, and Scott Walker have all come out in favor of the new law. Wait, oh, I guess I shouldn't say come out. They're behind it. Nope, behind it doesn't work either. They like it, but they don't like it.
In Indiana, a pizza restaurant is now saying it will not provide pizza for gay weddings. Yeah, well, the good news is only straight people are tacky enough to want pizza at their wedding. No gay person, no gay person is upset.
We'll show those gay people no pizza at their weddings.
Maybe a casual rehearsal dinner, but not the wedding.
Exactly.
In the historic K Don Studios in fabulous Las Vegas, the On the Air light is lit and the John Brislin Show is live.
Tell me who's that writing, John the Revelator. Tell me who's that writing, John the Revelator. Who's that writing, John the Revelator? Wrote the book of the seven seals.
To be on with John, call 702-257-5396. 257 KDWN.
And welcome, America, west of the Rockies, to the Pacific Ocean, north to Canada, and south to our friends in Mexico. Well, we've got some things to talk about today and a couple very interesting interviews with some authors we'll get to later on in the show, so you're going to enjoy that. Stay with me toward the end of the show. But right now, I want to talk about something that is, oh, so very interesting. Municipal elections. Well, luckily, I'm not talking about the municipal elections here in Las Vegas or in Henderson. Because God knows they are about as boring this year as they are every other year. There's always some reason to say, oh, well, don't you care about Mayor Goodman and blah, blah, blah. Yeah, sure, I think Mayor Goodman should go, but mine's not a fair evaluation, maybe, because my big thing is that nonsense that they're doing down on the Fremont Street with, just circus sideshow, ridiculous 80-year-old ladies with their boobs hanging out with black electrical tape over the nipples and hoping that somebody will take a picture with them. Ugh, just embarrassing, humiliating stuff. I mean, for Vegas. Vegas is elegant nudity or some variation of that. Anyway, I've covered that in a show a few weeks ago, and I'm not going to go into that again. Tonight, what I want to go into, and there's a lot to talk about, and I'm only going to skim across the top of it, but try to hit on the key points, is the municipal election in Ferguson, Missouri. In Ferguson, obviously, this is the town where the 18-year-old boy was shot by the police officer, Michael Brown, and, you know, it's gone through quite a bit of news hubbub. We have talked about it quite a bit in the news, for sure. Well, this is a town of about 21,000 people, and of those 21,000 people, let me read this off here to make sure I'm getting it exactly right. Currently, it is a city of 67% black, and only one of the seven city council members is African American. Now, it's probably going to double in this next race because, if for no other reason, that in one of the three wards that's open for election, Ward 3 is, it has both candidates are, in fact, black. So That one is going to go to a black person, and this is going to be relevant in a section. In a second, this isn't just about race and oh well, are they black, white. No, I want to show exactly why this is something that we should be paying attention to. They should be paying attention to first, but we should also be watching to see if this kind of thing could bleed over in some way to our neighborhoods. The Justice Department, under Eric Holder, did a review of Ferguson and the police force and how the laws were being, well, enforced, to keep it simple. And what they found was somewhat startling. And let me just read this here. The report gave credence to many of the grievances aired last year by African Americans in angry, sometimes violent protests after the deadly police shooting of Michael Brown, an unarmed black 18-year-old. Though the Justice Department separately concluded that the officer, Darren Wilson was his name, remember, he's a white guy, and they concluded that he violated no federal laws in that shooting. However, the Attorney General said investigations revealed that the root of the rage that brought people into the streets was telling. And some of the facts that they came up with, and this is from the United States Department of Justice findings, the population is 67% black. Vehicle stops were 85% black. Arrests were 93% black. Use of force cases were 88% use of force from the police on citizens were black. 92% were black. And cases of with warrants, 92% were black and jailed more than 2 days. And this is the truly interesting piece. Jailed more than 2 days. 95% of the people who were jailed longer than 2 days were black. So, although these numbers are very, very high, let's remember that 67% of the people there, according to these figures from the Department of Justice, the 67% are black. So a reasonable person would say then 67% of the arrests in all these different categories that I'm talking about should be black. That would be reasonable. And the fact that they're running in the 80s and 90s, even if I were their attorney for the city of Ferguson, even if I were advocating for them, which I'm not advocating for either side, I'm simply talking about interesting facts, I don't know in advocating for Ferguson how I would explain situations where 95% of people jailed more than 2 days were black and how that is okay. Now, Mayor James Knowles said that the city had begun making changes, but he did not directly address all the steps that the Department of Justice called for in the report or say whether he would fight the federal government in court. So, there were some interesting things that were brought out in the news. There were some things that were brought out in this investigation, and I want to just touch on them for a couple more, and then, you know what? Let's hear what the Attorney General said himself, and then I will explain how this is important with the courts in Ferguson and why the city council comes into play in all of this. And our hope for changing Ferguson is actually lying in the city council. Let's hear the Attorney General of the United States.
Good morning. The Justice Department announced the conclusion of our investigation and released a comprehensive 87-page report documenting our findings and our conclusions that the facts do not support the filing of criminal charges against Officer Darren Wilson in this case. Now, as detailed in what I will call our searing report, and it is searing, also released by the Justice Department today, this investigation found a community that was deeply polarized, a community where deep distrust and hostility often characterized interactions between police and area residents. A community where local authorities consistently approached law enforcement not as a means for protecting public safety, but as a way to generate revenue. Our investigation shows.
Now, that's an important piece that we'll get to in just a moment. The generating revenue part of the court system and the police force. This is something that is not local or is not specific to and not limited to Ferguson. This I have reported on, I have commented on in the past, where it's being done in courts across the country, especially in New Jersey. In New Jersey, where the court system, bring it all the way down. Pot it all the way down. In New Jersey, where the court systems are being used to raise money and charge people for public defenders when public defenders should be free. The public defenders are there to provide a defense for people who cannot afford an attorney, right? Right? Isn't that what it's for? Well, court systems, I don't want to rehash the show from a few weeks ago, but the court systems in some cities, specifically in New Jersey, but also in Texas and around the country, they are using the courts to raise fees. For example, in these cases that I talked about a couple weeks ago, in order to get a public defender, you have to pay, not for the public defender, because that's illegal. You have to pay to apply for the public defender in the neighborhood of between $50 and $300. So the court systems are being used to raise certain amount of money. Now, similarly, in Ferguson, what they found is that the courts are being used in a backwoods, unorganized, disorganized, I guess, a way where the records aren't being properly kept. So if anything goes wrong, there's really no recourse for the people of Ferguson, black or white. And there are quota systems being used in the police force, to make sure that if there is anyone out there, to make sure that the police are arresting enough people and giving enough tickets in order to raise money for the city. The arrests then go to the courts, and the courts will then fine them for anything from literally spitting on the sidewalk or jaywalking. And then this money will be raised. And if there are late fees, if someone's late paying their penalty, then they are incarcerated yet again, or else they have to pay more money. So in this soup sandwich of a court system and the municipal system in Ferguson, the fairness is completely wiped away, according to what I've been able to find, what I've seen, what I saw in the news, and what this Department of Justice findings tells me. In a situation like that, fairness goes out the window. They're trying to raise money via the court system, and that is ridiculous. That is un-American, and I have said it here before. But there is a unique thing in Ferguson that can help them. It is the fact that the judges in Ferguson are appointed and then reappointed by the city council. It is a city council that in the history of Ferguson has only had one black councilman, has only had one black representative. Remember, a city with 67% blacks, all white city council. And the all-white city council appoints judges that are using the court system and reinforcing the police that are using the law enforcement as a fundraising tool for the city. Now, I don't really know what the technical definition of corruption is, but it's sort of like pornography. I know it when I see it. And this does not look good. There is a candidate running in Ward 1. She is one black woman in a race with three other opponents who are all your stereotypical white men. I could tell you from personal experience of running in municipal elections, there is this stereotypical white guy. And that's what this is in Ward 1. And let's run the clip to hear the report that was done by Al Jazeera Network, as a matter of fact. I did a very good, very good report on them. Do we have that clip? Okay, we don't have the clip, but if we did, what it would tell you is that she is a 35-year-old single mother of two who, here we go.
a community slowly picks up the charred pieces of their city.
I'm Adrian Hawkins. I'm running for city council for our ward, Ward 1.
Hi, I'm Mike McGrath.
Hi, Mike.
Running for council, Ward 1. The
protesters may have cleared, but a new campaign is in full swing.
I'd love to invite you to the candidate forum. It's the last one.
The contenders know that the eyes of the nation are on them. Two-thirds of residents in Ferguson are black, yet the current six-member city council has only one black member. There are three open seats. One ward has only white candidates, another only black candidates. But in Ward 1, four residents are vying for the seat in a racially diverse race. The victor will determine if Ferguson City Council stays majority white or divides equally between black and white members.
What inspired you to run?
It was the death of Michael Brown. You know, just the thought of my children not returning home for walking down the street was way too much to handle. And something had to change.
Adrian Hawkins has been a Ferguson resident for 27 years.
All right, now that's the piece right there where she is leaning on the story of Michael Brown to get herself elected. I don't have the time to go into that any deeper, but that is standard municipal election or any election policy. So I will follow this and probably cover it in the next couple of weeks a little bit more. In fact, next week I can almost guarantee I'm going to talk about this more. But we will see what will happen in Ferguson, in the court systems, in the policing of Ferguson, as a result of a more accurate, hopefully more accurate representation of the demographics of Ferguson in the city council. Next up, Jeff Doty, author of a fantastic book. We'll talk with him on the John Breslin Show, 702-257-5396.
John Breslin, making caffeine addiction look good.
Listen live or archive on www.johnbrislinshow.com.
Irv Golding gets more than he bargained for when he stumbles across the remains of a mutilated body in a park near banks of the Fox River. An uneasy feeling has descended upon the residents of South Elgin, Illinois, as they learn about the gruesome discovery, and it's not long before the bodies begin to stack up. Ride along with Detective Rick Miller and Rookie Investigator Officer Dan Keyes as they work to put an end to this sick and twisted madness. Take a unique look inside the mind of a serial killer and his macabre motives that compel him to kill. Cry for Me by Richard M. Awe. Available at Amazon.com.
The White House just announced that President Obama will attend a summit in Kenya this July. Yep. When asked if he's ever been to Kenya, Obama was like, "Of course, I was bored. I was bored. There's nothing to do. So I was bored there. Bye, Z."
President Obama is scheduled to make his first trip as president to Kenya this July. That would explain why earlier today, Donald Trump exploded. Fully exploded.
The White House confirmed that President Obama will meet with Pope Francis during his visit in September. Some experts are wondering if they'll discuss their disagreement over contraception. Then Joe Biden was like, "I didn't even know they were dating." And you go.
John Breslin. To be on with John, call 702-257-5396. 257-KDWN.
DoCases.com is dedicated to providing customers with the latest high-quality wireless accessories. They want to help you find all the essential wireless accessories you need for your customers. If they make it for a cell phone, they have it at DoCases.com. They have one of the greatest selections of wireless accessories nationwide. So go to Docases, that's DOCASES.com. And make sure you use the code AM720. That'll get you 25% off for all John Brislin Show listeners. And again, that's Docases, DOCASES.com. And other generous sponsorship has been provided by, without a question, searchforithere.com. That's searchforithere.com. And without a question, they are the go-to online business directory. Customers search for search the trusted and up-to-date databases 24/7, 365 to find local businesses in every single niche. Now, they are by far the best business directory. You want to keep in mind there is a Diamond plan, which is an exceptional plan. It costs an amazing $19 per month, and the plan includes featured listing. Featured listing is an addition to your regular plan. Featured listing places your business in premium location in their directory. Now, the site is pronounced searchforithere.com, searchforithere.com. And you can either email them at sales@searchforithere.com or call them at 253-324-3352. That number again is 253-324-3352, searchforithere.com.
Listen live or archive on www.johnbrislinshow.com. Listen live or archive on www.johnbrislinshow.com.
John Brislin. To be on with John, call 702-257-5396. 257-KDWN.
Welcome back to the John Brislin Show. The phone number to be on with John is 702-257-5396, 257-KDWN. And I am very pleased to have a guest tonight. His name is Jeffrey Dean Doughty, and he is an editor and journalist with Outer Boundary Magazine. He has published articles and short stories in both regional and national magazines, and he has published 6 books, including the true crime novel Piggyback. And Jeff Doughty, welcome to the John Brislin Show.
Thank you.
Well, Your book, what was the inspiration with your book? How did you say, I've got a story that I've got to write?
Well, actually, it started out as I wasn't real interested in writing it, to be honest, because I don't normally write true crime novels. But I happened to be friends with a couple of attorneys and that worked on this particular case. One was a prosecutor, and the other was the public defender who represented the man, Jack McCullough, who was eventually convicted. And when I was talking to them, they mentioned that it was the oldest cold case in U.S. history ever to be successfully prosecuted. And that's what brought my interest, because I'm a bit of a history buff.
Oh, me too.
I figured I'd write this little short, 120, 150 page book about, open and shut cold case. And it turned out, as I investigated it, I found out that it was impossible for the man who was convicted to have committed the murder. He was actually 42 miles away at the time of the kidnapping.
Now, I know that you and I have talked about the fact that there have been problems that he ran into with the justice system and how those problems are kind of influenced by politics. Now, that was just what I was talking about a second ago with Ferguson, that the court systems are, that the judges are appointed by the city council. So there's the intermingling of the power of politics is just, it's all over the place, and it can lead to a type of corruption. Do you think corruption is what caused him to be wrongfully convicted?
I would say it was definitely the influence. In Illinois, the prosecutors, the state's attorney, has to run for reelection. And this particular state's attorney was running behind in the polls, and all of a sudden this big splashy case landed in his lap. And so, you know, hey, that was his, I would say that was certainly led to some ignoring of facts.
Right.
You know, and that's what, you know, you have, when you have the pressure of having to be reelected, it's not about whether you're doing your job right and making sure there's justice. It's, you've got to have the numbers and the convictions. And a big showy conviction certainly helps.
Now, how was the defense? I mean, was it a solid defense? I mean, I would have to assume no if they lost, but that's not always the case.
Well, the problem was they brought in an outside judge. The judge that was originally supposed to hear the case stepped out and down because of personal reasons.
Mm-hmm.
And they brought in a judge from an outside county, and this was his first felony crime trial ever. And there were a lot of mistakes made, and in every single case where a ruling was needed, he ruled in favor of the prosecution rather than the defense, literally every single time. In a normal trial, there will be judgments that come down on both sides, you know, making it a fair and even playing field.
Well, if I can interrupt there for just one second.
Sure.
Jeff, can you stay on with me for through the break? I've got to go to a hard break right now, but I want to talk about what the facts of the case were. What was the story that led to this? This is the John Breslin Show. I am talking with Jeffrey Dean Doughty, who is the author of Piggyback, a fantastic book, and you should pick it up on Amazon.com or some various other places and hear more about it when we come back from this very quick break. And this is the John Breslin Show. Stay right where you are, you.
Hi, I'm Jim Littner with Veterans Care Foundation. Join us for Veterans Talk, The Forgotten Promise, every Saturday at noon on your Veterans Talk radio station, KDWN AM 720.
Hey, Las Vegas, the word is out, and our competitors are running for the hills. DLC is now funding auto title loans. Your trusted community lender for over 15 years is now funding auto title loans. We're lending up to 80% of your vehicle's value, and you only pay interest for the amount of days you have your loan out. Simply put, Dollar Loan Center is the best deal in town by far. Call 702-364-LOAN for all the details. No credit checks, up to $10,000, and as always, just minutes to process your title loan. With more than 25 area locations, or apply and get funded online at don'tbebroke.com. Signature loans up to $2,500 or auto title loans up to $10,000. Call 702-364-LOAN today.
Licensed by Nevada Financial Institutions Division. Loans are subject to approval.
If you or someone you know is addicted to drugs or alcohol, this could be the most important message of your life. Write down this number or store it in your cell phone. But call 1-800-509-9233. That's 1-800-509-9233. By calling the Treatment Helpline for Drug and Alcohol Addiction, you can turn your life around. This call is completely confidential. And if you have private insurance, there should be no cost to you. Our advisors will match you with a proven 5-star luxury treatment center that will end your drug or alcohol addiction once and for all. Your future can still be bright. Let us help you break your addiction to drug or alcohol before it's too late. This call is completely confidential. And if you have private insurance, there should be no cost to you. Take 5 minutes of your time and call right now. It may change your life for the better. Call 1-800-509-9233. That's 1-800-509-9233. 1-800-509-9233.
The inertia and gravity clothes hanger is a patent-pending invention that would enable you to hang your clothes much faster and easier than any other conventional clothes hanger. It would literally take 2 seconds to hang a shirt or blouse on the inertia and gravity clothes hanger and just 1 second to remove it from the hanger. But they need your support for this idea, so please, please support them at www.gofundme.com and then /invention-hanger. That's /invention-hanger. And check out the new rock band, Independent Soul. This is an interesting band. You really should check them out. Independent Soul, formed in May of last year, Independent Soul is a young band with a classic sound consisting of a complex drum beats, rock solid rhythm, awesome guitar solos, and the best bass licks and runs known to mankind, all together with heartfelt making a sound. Check out their album online at iTunes and many more, or visit their Facebook, and that's the band Independent Soul. Independent Soul, you should check them out. They are truly really good. And one last ad is Psychic Lenora brings you psychic readings to the comfort of your home by email or Skype chat. Lenora is very popular and has been doing readings for over 20 years. Currently, she works on television and has had her readings published in national magazines. So check out the website to find out more. That's LenoraWorld.com. LenoraWorld.com.
This week, another potential candidate, Rand Paul, said that he's the only one who could beat Hillary Clinton in certain swing states. Hillary was like, that's ridiculous. While Bill was like, did somebody say swing? No, Bill, no.
Senator Ted Cruz said that if you walk up to someone and say Joe Biden, the person will crack up laughing, which is the same reaction you get if you say President Ted Cruz.
And get this, it's being reported that Hillary Clinton has hired a research director to generate positive stories about her in the news so that they can move past her email scandal. And it seems like they're really trying to make her look good. I mean, check out some of these headlines, these stories they're putting out there. First, there's Hillary invents method for getting straw into Capri Sun powder. First try. Here's another story. Hillary forces Time Warner repairmen to give you a 20-minute window instead of a 2-hour window. Hillary meerkats Bill mumbling to himself in bathroom, wins internet. As everyone's meerkatting. And finally, this is the best one. Hillary says all guac at Chipotle this year on me.
It's DJs for PJs time. That's right. It's time to start collecting new pairs of pajamas for Southern Nevada children in need. The 13th annual DJs for PJs event is April 17th. Visit DJsForPJs.com to sign up to collect PJs at your business, school, or church. Stop by any Kohl's to purchase PJs. Then on April 17th, go to either of the Kohl's collection sites, Valley Verde or Summerlin, to donate pajamas all day from 6 a.m. till 7 p.m. Visit DJsForPJs.com for all the details.
Brought to you in part by My Kids Dentist and Beasley Media Group, Las Vegas.
Hi, this is Doug Basham. You know, the guy you just can't get enough of. Or is that the guy you just love to hate? In either case, join me every Saturday afternoon at 3 for something a bit different. That's Saturday afternoons at 3 p.m. See you then.
Tell me who's in writing. Johnny Revelator. Tell me who's in writing. Johnny Revelator. Who's that writing? Johnny Revelator wrote the book of the seven.
And welcome back to the John Brislin Show, where I am talking tonight with Jeffrey Dean Doty, who is the author of the true crime novel Piggyback. Now, Jeff, what's the story behind this case? How did it start, and what happened?
Well, in December 3rd of 1957. A girl by the name of Maria Ridolph was kidnapped just down the street from her home. She and a girlfriend were playing on the corner, and a stranger approached them and offered them piggyback rides, hence the title. And
how old were they?
Maria was 7, and her friend Kathy Chapman or Sigmund was 8 years old. And so Maria took a piggyback ride with him, and because it was the first snowfall, it got cold, and Kathy decided to go home for mittens. And at the time she went home for mittens, that was the last anyone saw of Maria alive. When Kathy came back to the corner, Maria and the stranger who had introduced himself as Johnny, were gone. And a nationwide manhunt began. The FBI was called in. President Eisenhower was asking for daily updates. It really grabbed the nation's attention. And
I can imagine. My daughter is 7 years old, and I can't even imagine if something, God forbid, that ever happened. I would just lose my mind. I'm sure everyone was. I'm sorry to interrupt. Continue, please.
No, that's fine. 6 months later, her body was found about 100 miles away in northern Illinois. Shortly after that, pretty much all leads petered out. The only witness to the kidnapper was Kathy Sigmund, who later on in 2008 was asked to identify the man, Jack McCullough, out of a lineup of photos taken from back in 1957. And she identified Jack McCullough, who at that time was known as John Tessier. And it was part of a prosecution that was kind of an investigation that was kind of like a lot of things came together in order to lead to John Tessier, who had actually been investigated and cleared by the FBI just about, I think it was 5 days after the kidnapping. His alibi was pretty airtight. He was making a collect call at 6:57 p.m. The kidnapping took place between 6:55 and 7 p.m. in Sycamore. He was making a collect call from Rockford, which is 42 miles away. It's two counties away, to give you an idea of distance. From 6:57 to 6:59, there's no way he could have done it. However, that evidence was not allowed into court. It was ruled hearsay because all of the FBI agents that had collected that information were now dead, and the phone company was gone. So there were no business records. So
interesting.
His defense was gone, you know. And so when they resurrected the prosecution later on, based off of a statement that his mother made on her deathbed to one of his half-sisters, or actually two of his half-sisters, and they conflicted about what mom said. Because of that statement, which was, according to the one sister, those two girls, the one that disappeared, he did it, Johnny did it, you have to tell somebody. The other sister, who was on the other side of the bed, said all mom said was he did it, not who did what. So... But
now,
they took.
Go ahead. Well, I was just thinking when you're looking at cases like this with all of this complication, I suppose if I spent more time in or involved with murder cases, I would find that they're almost always this complicated. How does it make you feel about the idea of? I have a political mind, so my mind starts to think this way. The idea of the death penalty. I mean, there are so many cases where, you know, if anybody's going to kill somebody else, they're going to try to blame someone who's innocent. And even in the cases where that's not necessarily happening, still some version of it is happening through just straight plain complications like the FBI agents not being alive or the things that you're describing. I mean, right. do with all of this, do you support the death penalty? What do you think?
You know, all my life I supported the death penalty. This working on this particular book, in this case in general, has given me doubts. I would say the only time I would be comfortable with the death penalty from here on out would be if there was strong physical evidence. I would say DNA evidence. You know, I would think that would be a case where you can be positive. But if you don't have strong linking evidence like that, then I would rather, you know, give them life in prison, because then if they are innocent, they've got a chance. You know, they've got a chance to prove it. Because once you kill somebody, you can't resurrect them.
Yeah, of course. Now, with that, the one thing I've got to... This has been something that has been on my mind forever, that if you're going to have a case with a potential death penalty or life in prison, if that is a potential outcome, then shouldn't there be a fast track? Instead of having this take 20, 19, 18, 15, 20, who knows, decades, Shouldn't there be a fast track?
Yeah, are you talking like a time limit?
I guess a time limit. I'm saying if somebody is, you know, up for the death penalty, they are being accused of first degree murder, and they could potentially either be killed or spend life in prison. You know, the appeal after appeal after appeal, and the process taking 10, 15, 20 years, they're on death row and they're still sitting in prison after 20 years. Shouldn't there be something to expedite that?
I would think that murder cases should definitely be given a priority. You know, just, you know, in this case, we have an innocent man that he's been in prison now for almost 4 years, you know, and if he could have gotten his appeals heard faster, if they could have been, you know, fast-tracked, as you would say, then there's a chance that he might have been out sooner and not had to waste those years of his life. But as it is, we're probably looking at the very earliest at least another year before he can be released, should the state Supreme Court rule in his favor.
Truly an interesting story. Jeff Dottie, as my guest tonight, the author of Piggyback, a true crime novel. And if anyone wants to find out more about the book and sit by the pool and read a good book, how do they find it?
The best way is just to go to Amazon.com. Okay. I mean, you can order it through your local bookstores, too. It's available that way. But I think Amazon probably gives about the best deal on it right now.
All right. Well, Jeff Dottie, thank you very much for spending part of your night tonight with me and with us here at the John Breslin Show. And his novel is a true crime novel called Piggyback. Fantastic. And you really should pick it up for when you're heading to the pool. Jeff Dottie, thank you very much.
Thank you. It's my pleasure.
And stay right where you are, you. I will be right back after this very, very brief message.
You may not be thrilled to do it, but there's a time and a place to take your turn. Whether it's doing laundry, taking out the trash, or more importantly, being the designated driver. When you take turns, you and your friends will know who can let loose and who will stay sober. And you may be saving each other's lives, because driving impaired is a major killer on Nevada's roads. Plan ahead and designate a sober driver. Together, we can reach zero fatalities.
Welcome back to the John Breslin Show. Well, I have another guest with me tonight in the studio, actually on the phone lines, forgive me that. When you think of an author, you rarely think of a 6'4", big, burly biker guy, unless you're thinking of Richard Aw. Now, he is a blue-collar family man who happens to ride a Harley and loves to tell a good story. And Richard Aw, welcome to the John Breslin Show.
Well, thank you, John. It's a pleasure to be with you tonight.
Now, the thing I always wonder about when it comes to writing a book, and whenever any writing that I've ever done, has always been the product of some inspiration. Something popped, something lit up in my mind and said, I've got to write this down, expand on it, and turn it into something. What was it that lit up in your mind and said, this is a story I've got to tell?
Well, I've always told a good story, whether it be around a campfire or writing short stories that I would bang out on a early 20s on an IBM wheel writer. but in this case, I had broke my ankle and had surgery on it and was laid up with some extensive recovery time. And at the urging of my wife and my sister, they said, you've got some downtime. Let's write this book we've been telling you to write forever. And the idea, the concept of the book really came in about a day and a half of writing down some outline and opened up the computer and started banging away, and out came Cry For Me.
Well, Richard Aw, the author of Cry For Me, is my guest here tonight on the John Breslin Show. Tell me about the overall plot. What's the story about?
Well, it's set locally where I live in Illinois, in a small town where I grew up, in South Elgin. It's a fiction story. I use real places in it. It's about a serial killer who has a very macabre motive for that compels him to kill. And I really want to get into, you know, why he kills, because that kind of gives away the whole book. But he's just compelled to kill to kill pain, and the reason why he kills when a reader reads a book is fascinating.
Well, is this based on any kind of personal experience or any kind of or is it pure creativity?
Pure creativity. It's just a figment of my imagination.
Well, in the research that you did for the book, and as far as the law enforcement and the court system and whatnot, I forgive me. Please just bear with me as I go back to the beginning of the show where I talked about Ferguson, and with all the events that happened in Ferguson and the Department of Justice findings and their investigation, what it is really looking like when you take a good look at all of that is that the court system and the police were basically, I guess, corrupt in a way. Now, did that kind of corruption follow through in your story? Is this a story of corruption in the government or the police or just pure psychopathic drive?
It's a pure psychopathic drive. I didn't write about any corruption, although I did kind of hint a little bit towards some of Illinois's what they're famous for their politics when I spoke of the state ran mental institution and how it was ran. But yeah, there's not a whole lot of corruption I wrote about it. Although being from Illinois, I could have wrote volumes on corruption in government.
Well, yeah, the old Chicago machine, right? That's pretty famous.
Exactly.
Now, what is your family's response? I mean, I know when I was writing a book myself, and still am, as a matter of fact, and as I finish it, I've noticed that there hasn't been a huge positive reaction from the people in my family, but I'm writing nonfiction. I'm writing something that's a little drier, closer to C-SPAN, I suppose. What has your family's reaction been to you becoming an author?
Well, I mean, they're excited about it. They're happy for me. But one of their initial reactions once they read the book and how detailed and how well written it was, they couldn't believe that I wrote that at first. And then the second thing they said was, after they read about the killer and how he killed and stuff, do we have to be worried now around you?
Because exactly, and that's that. You know, when you see someone who's telling a story like this, and their mind works in that way, there you see how the ideas of killing, and especially, bizarre killing or psychopathic tendencies, you have to wonder if the person who's writing it has anything like that going on in their mind.
Yeah. In my case, no, I didn't have any of that going on in my mind.
Well, you're not going to confess. I mean, you're not going
to... Well, absolutely. Especially not on the radio. But what I did was to try and get my reader to to get the feel that the killer is just this terrible, heinous killer, is I just thought to myself, what did I consider just to be the most heinous type of way to kill somebody? And just what I just thought was just terribly gruesome or offensive. And that's how I kind of became that character and wrote about that murder. So,
well, Richard Awe, the author of Cry For Me, my guest tonight. Richard, can you stay on through the commercial? I'm up against a hard break, but after we take it, can we come back and continue this conversation?
Absolutely.
All right. Richard Awe, the author of Cry For Me, the guest tonight on the John Breslin Show. Stay right where you are. We will be back with more.
John Breslin. Polite conversation avoids politics and religion in gross bad manners.
John Breslin. To be on with John, call 702-257-5396. 257 KDWN.
Irv Golding gets more than he bargained for when he stumbles across the remains of a mutilated body in a park near banks of the Fox River. An uneasy feeling has descended upon the residents of South Elgin, Illinois, as they learn about the gruesome discovery, and it's not long before the bodies begin to stack up. Ride along with Detective Rick Miller and Rookie Investigator Officer Dan Keyes as they work to put an end to this sick and twisted madness. Take a unique look inside the mind of a serial killer and his macabre motives that compel him to kill. Cry for Me by Richard M. Awe. Available at Amazon.com.
In a recent interview, the president revealed that he doesn't always get enough sleep. I think I speak for everyone when I say, good. Yeah, that's it. We pay you money to do that, so we can watch Dancing with the Stars and go to sleep. That's what we pay you here. You're the president, yeah.
This is a nice story. Homeless people in Rome were given a guided tour of the Sistine Chapel today and a free dinner. It's part of a new initiative called Rubbing It In.
Yesterday, Jeb Bush criticized President Obama's foreign policy and said that his administration uses schoolyard antics. When you heard that, Obama was like, is this about Biden's swing set? Because we can always take that down. It makes him happy.
Listen live or archive on www.johnbrislinshow.com.
Check out the Sports Podcast, which is the funniest, freest weekly sports podcast on the internet. It's at soundcloud.com/sports3podcast. It is filled with hilarious sketches, interviews, and news from the world of sports, featuring comedians Joel Anderson, Jordan Palmaville, and the sports outsider Phil Ranta. Again, it's free and available at soundcloud.com/sports3podcast or tweet or Facebook at sports3podcast. And are you looking for a way to escape the monotony of your life? Searching for an exciting new fantasy book series to read? Well, author Joseph Macalino wants to help you do just that. Check out Amazon.com to find his latest book for sale in the Everath series. That's E-V-O-R-A-T-H series. And start your own epic adventure in Everath. Anything is possible. Again, that's Everath, E-V-O-R-A-T-H.
John Brislin. To be on with John, call 702-257-5396. 257-KDWN.
And welcome back to the John Brislin Show. My guest tonight is Richard Awe, who is the author of the book Cry For Me. Richard, if anyone wants to get a copy of your book and sit by the poolside and read a very, very good novel, how do they do that? How do they do it?
Best place to go, just go to Amazon.com. I mean, it's available in any of your bookstores. You can order through them, but easiest way, just go to Amazon.com.
Amazon, okay. Well, Amazon.com for the book Cry For Me, and that is written by Richard Awe. Richard, thank you very much for spending some time with me tonight, and I look forward to reading the book.
Thank you, John. It's been a pleasure.
All right. Richard Awe wrote the book Cry For Me. You know what? So there's a certain part of me that has wondered for a long time whether or not either you could have hate crime legislation that's out there based on what somebody's thinking, what somebody's feeling when they do some sort of act. And one of the things is that, you know, how can you penalize someone for what they're thinking any more than you can penalize an author for just writing something that, you know, that is a crime novel, that is something where a psychopathic killer Stephen King kind of crime novel. So, I don't know. That's just a little aside that after I was talking with Richard, it got me thinking about. Next week on the show, I want to dig into the U.S.-Iranian talks, the nuclear talks, as a lot of people are saying. And we're going to talk a little bit about what exactly is happening in that region and why it's truly important to America. And as you may know, Barack Obama has come very close to being able to have an agreement reached between the United States and Iran as far as
their nuclear program.
Wow, there's no time. When you're well, producer Clyde's giving me the finger that we've got to go, and luckily it's the good finger. We'll have to talk about that about that next week. He's moving all his fingers all around now to pick out which one's the good finger, right? Well, remember, next week is Iran and more on the municipal elections in Ferguson. And always remember that America is advanced citizenship. You have got to want it bad because it is going to put up a fight. And I will be here fighting for it with you and producer Clyde Barnett, the man on the other side of the glass, the man with the finger, every single week on the John Brislin Show on KDWN at 9 o'clock Saturday night, Facebook and Twitter. Good night, America, wherever you are.
Who's that right hand? John the Revelator wrote the book of seven seals. AM's.